Welcome to the Who Shot Ya Christmas / Holiday episode.
Careful, man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm Iffy Wadiway. On the show, we have film reviews editor at The Wrap, Alonzo Duralde, a.k.a. Christmas Zaddy. What's good?
I'll tell you what's good, Iffy. My tree this year is so good.
It didn't happen.
Believe me, but by the time this show airs, you'll have seen plenty. We got it delivered from a place where they guarantee that it's been cut within 48 hours of the shipping. So it's not like it's been sitting, you know, in the parking lot of the big box store for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
So it came fresh. It came sappy. You knew it was drinking water, the whole thing. And it's just like, it's totally changed the way I'm going to buy trees from now on.
Really?
Because, yeah, I've had some real old scrubs in the past, but this one is just green and vibrant, and it's doing all the things.
I like my partners like I like my trees, fresh and sappy.
Oh, wow. Well, that voice who loves a fresh and sappy partner is producer and Films Festival programmer Drea Clark. What's good?
This is not what's good. I don't decorate for Christmas, and now I'm feeling a little like, he's getting fresh trees, and I don't do anything. I just, maybe I'll decorate my cats. I'll do that.
They'll love that.
Yes, I figured. Just a few weeks ago, one of my very oldest friends in the world was on a podcast that's one of my favorite podcasts. The podcast is called Heavyweight. It's hosted by Jonathan Goldstein, and each episode he kind of digs into essentially a weight that someone's been carrying around, an emotional weight or something that was wrong with them, something they need to be fixed or answered. And my friend Steve Marsh, whom I grew up with, the episode is called The Marshes. It's about him and his family and trying to look for the sister that he found out about that his parents had when they were very young and gave up for adoption. And then they never heard about her until it sort of accidentally came out just a few years ago. And it's an incredible thing to listen to. I cry at almost every episode of Heavyweight. But this one means a lot, mostly because it's one of my best friends, but also because my own family went through a very similar story of my parents having a child very young and giving her up for adoption. And our results are different. Like, my sister found us and they're looking for hers. But in the doing of that, the amount of people, whenever I tell the story, the amount of people who are like, oh yeah, a few years ago we found out we had a half sister, or so many people, especially from that era of when women were having secret children still. Mm. It's really interesting to me how many random adoption stories or secret family stories people have. So Heavyweight episode is called The Marshes. It's so good. I cried the entire time. You might only cry a little bit.
Iffy, what's good?
Good with me is, well, you know, same thing. Getting ready for Christmas, getting ready to decorate, but I have to prepare for it because I have to wait till Naomi's there and wants to do it. But then I'm going to take her up to see the snow because she has yet to see the snow. And I didn't see snow. I'm an LA native and I didn't see the snow till I was 21. So I'm changing that and letting her see the snow at the ripe age of 3.5. And also, I had an epiphany when I was coming home from the gym and I figured out what I'm getting y'all for Christmas and I can't wait.
My God, I'm going to get you snow, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. I need it. I love it. Oh.
I love stories of people who don't see snow until late, because I am from Minnesota, and I was born in January. So I always think of, the Bane speech in The Dark Knight. I'm like, I was born of the snow.
You were born in the snow. Molded by it. You didn't see sun till you were but a woman. They rolled me home.
Basically.
All right, on today's show, we will discuss that hot, I think it's probably one of, it's called the Christmas movie. I think it's the one of the most popular Christmas movie, Scrooged, and of course, other Christmas Carol films. Alonzo will finally name his top 5 favorite Christmas movies of the year, and of course, staff picks. But first, since it's a few days before Christmas, we have a visit from a very special person. The reason for the season, Santa Claus.
I hear something on the roof.
Hey, it's me, Santa Claus.
Hey,
how's it
Santa?
Going, everybody?
Oh, Santa Claus.
Good to be here.
Welcome to the show.
What a rush.
I know.
Like what an incredible outfit you have on.
Thank you. It's very tight. I am here today because I've got a little bit of a problem. I'm kind of behind on my shit this year, and I'm still putting together my naughty and nice list. And I cannot figure out what to do for a few folks that are on this list, and I was hoping you all could help me out and let me know what you think.
We love judging people.
It would be our pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Are you guys ready to help me decide who is naughty and who is nice?
Oh, yeah, totally.
All right, first on my list, Martin Scorsese.
Okay, you know, normally nice, I would say, but I'm going to give him naughty this year for poking at the fanboys online and also making us sit in for 3 hours.
You loved that movie!
I did. I had the time of my life.
I'm going to say nice just to be contrarian. I'll say nice. I think he's an old man who means well.
Oh, of course.
I think he has no grasp of what he's poking at when he brings up pointless things like beefing with Marvel or its fans.
I like it.
I think nice because I think, frankly, that was a good conversation to have.
Yeah, pragmatic.
As much as like dorky fanboys were dorky fanboys about it, I think it raised some interesting discussions about the future of the cinema, which is a thing that he's always been interested in. And I've now seen The Irishman twice, so.
Ooh, you went for the two.
Yeah, I did a piece for The Wrap where I watched it again on Netflix to compare the two experiences. So yeah, that's 7 hours of my life that I gave to Marty. So yeah, I totally nice.
All right, putting him down for nice. He'll get a present instead of some coal. Next on my list, Scarlett Johansson.
God. There's such a chill in here. Is that because you left the door open when you came through, Santa?
Oh, excuse me. I'll close that right behind me.
Man, it's really hard for me to defend her as a white woman, as if you would say. I feel like she's someone who I know where she's coming from with a lot of what she says. And I also know when you start as a child actor, the weird bubble you go through the world and how things are reflected back to you or not, really motivates what you're saying and how you say things. She needs to learn from what she does and her recent stuff and her absolute, it's the Woody Allen stuff more than anything else that I will say naughty for, because I think there's personal growth she could have, even though I do know where she comes from in terms of trying to be someone acknowledging that there are complexities to all of these issues.
It's that thing that makes me crazy because, like, the stuff in her personal life and the things that she says as herself makes me insane.
Yeah.
But the work is great.
Yeah.
Like, she was great in Jojo Rabbit, a movie that I was only kind of mezzo on. She's great in Marriage Story. Like, I think that is one of the, you know, in a crowded field of great female performances here, I think a great lead turn. She, even in Avengers Endgame, you know, like, she brings a lot to that. So I think I gotta fall on the nice end just because the work is so good, although you're right, I think personally there's some naughty happening, so yeah, I'm torn, but I'm gonna go with nice just to acknowledge her actressing.
Yeah, I want to lean nice because there's lots of reasons. Like I said, same thing. I think the JoJo performance was great. Endgame, great. I haven't seen Marriage Story yet. I hear wonderful things about it. And I'm super hyped on that new Black Widow trailer. Mm. It looks great. And the fact that she's still dating Colin Jost means that
engaged.
I have a... Ugh. All right, then forget this, Nathan. She's definitely on the naughty
list. Yeah, he's moving to the lot. Well, listen, I was going to go all this,
and it was going to end in the fact that she was on the naughty list because I think she should stand with women, not to mansplain standing with women to women. But, you know, the Woody Allen thing's kind of rough, and I feel like that's something that even if you feel that way, it doesn't necessarily need to be said in a publication. That's something you can kind of be like, No comment.
Yeah, and stop talking about how you should be able to play trans people.
Yeah. Oh, please. Yes, I forgot about that.
Well, though she that's her big thing, and then the Ghost in the Shell and all.
So that's a naughty.
Yeah, naughty. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't think she was very good in Rough Night. All right, moving on. Tyrese.
Listen, Tyrese is nice. The man is an artist and a hero, and I respect and adore him. I will not hear bad words about him. All he wants is to work. He cares about the franchise he's involved in. He cares deeply. I think passion is a credit in this world. Tyrese for president, 2020.
I think that Tyrese's social media manager is naughty. And if he doesn't have a social media manager, then Tyrese is naughty.
I just want to show y'all. Because
someone should be
stopping
him.
He should call Winter Mitchell.
Someone should stop him from Instagramming.
I have a friend in New York, Mamadou. We have a shared love of everything Tyrese just fully out puts out into the world. Here's one of his tweets that he posted think about all the time.
So Iffy has just handed me a photo that Tyrese posted on May 28th, 2011. Yes. So you know he's had this in his photos for a while. It is side-by-side photos of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and Tyrese, both wearing the same hats, with the caption, "God has clearly revealed to me that this is my next step, ... Lord, I accept."
Now, and I want you
to
note,
you're gonna make me switch
how
my
many
vote.
How many MLK movies there's been since May 28, 2011, and also note how many Tyrese has been in.
Yes.
And, wow.
But that's, I love those big swings. I love, you know, when he, gosh, was that this year when he was going through the unfortunate, and this was like a bad, I felt real bad for him, but he had the whole, like, custody thing going on. But then there was a moment during it where he posted a picture holding his Bumblebee statue's hand, and he was like, "Bumblebee, help me through this." And he is a larger-than-life person. My buddy Ronnie from White Women went to see Black and Blue, and Tyrese showed up at the theater to hype people up before.
He came to one of my screening of Fast and Furious a few years ago.
And the reason I'm going to give him nice is because say what you will about him. That
you're
is
giving
a,
him nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Love it. Good. I agree.
I love someone who's passionate, even if sometimes it does make them a little doofy appearing. But, like, you just love it. You love someone who's passionate about what they do and who will, like, support their stuff than be like, "All right, I'm just making a check."
So you're saying he's an entertainer even when he doesn't realize he's being an entertainer.
Yes, that's 1,000% what I'm saying.
Yes. Same. I think that there's something about just being out there, dorkily loving what you do, boldly, with no idea of how you're coming across.
This man has 3 life-size Transformers in his home.
Stop it. And nice.
Wow.
Nice.
Yes.
What's 3. Not to like?
3. I've seen it in videos, and it's never like he's never showing them off. It's always like in the background where I'm like, "That's an Optimus Prime."
So that's a nice then?
Yes.
Okay, very good. He has a fully functioning Benihana grill in his backyard as well. So he gets on the nice list.
Can we please do a future episode just guessing what stuff Tyrese has in his house?
Please.
Because I could talk about that for 18 hours.
Oh.
All right, here we go. This is the last one I have. Netflix.
Ooh. Santa. I can see why these got pushed down the list.
Yeah, these are the tricky ones. I gotta say nice because, you know, for all the theater chains and the studio heads bitching about The Irishman, nobody else stepped up to make The Irishman but Netflix. Mm. And, you know, Netflix stepped up to make Marriage Story. Netflix stepped up to acquire Atlantics and that animated film, the name just flew out of my head, about the severed hand. They are naughty for canceling One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they also figured out a way to bring us a great British baking show at the same time as it airs in the UK. And that carries a lot of weight with me. So
I lost my body.
I lost my body. Thank you. So, yeah, I you know what? It's very easy to complain about Netflix. And God knows, good luck finding a movie on there made before 1950. But all in all, I think that they're doing interesting work and they're taking the overall industry of film and TV in an interesting direction, so I say nice.
I feel like Netflix was one of the few tech companies that set out to disrupt and is actually doing it and aren't using it to sell our data to the government yet.
They did kowtow to Saudi Arabia about that, you know, that one special.
But, I know, and they straight up was like, we're not in the business of truth to power. And I was like, you know what? It's nice for someone to just come out and say it every once in a while.
Acknowledge it.
But I will say I agree with Alonzo. They're pushing film in interesting ways, and I'm really liking this trend, even though they're doing it for awards. I like the trend of it getting a theater run before you can see it, because there is something to some of these movies that we kind of have to wait for Netflix. It is something about sitting in a theater and watching some of them. Like, I really enjoyed seeing The Irishman in theaters, and when people would ask me, like, oh, should I just wait? I always said, go see it in the theaters. One, because I like the experience. Two, because most of my friends are millennials. And I said, you're going to get on your phone. It's going to take you out the movie. And then you're going to complain about the movie even though you weren't paying attention. nice.
Nice for you. I would agree, nice, because I loved everything that both of you said. Mostly Alonzo. It's a little iffy.
Ouch. Ouch.
But no, I do think there's films that they're supporting that are raising artistic bars, that are bringing challenging work from interesting directors. But I also, on a whole other side, this in the past year, they started doing regular rom-coms, and it is a genre that I love so much that my friend Hannah and I have this ongoing thing of, I wish there was a new romantic comedy that came out every weekend. I would go see it happily. And Netflix kind of started doing that. They had some great Set It Up. They had...
what's the one with... we did an episode
Lara
about?
Lara Jean.
Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, Always Be My Maybe. Yeah. They had the...
Do all the boys I love before.
Thank you, Santa.
Let It Snow.
Let It Snow, which was great. So there's... I'm very happy they are continuing to build a new generation of rom-com followers. And to that, I give them a nice.
All right. Very good. Got my list already. I'm going to head out. You know what my favorite Christmas movie is?
What?
Mixed Nuts.
Oh wow.
Bold choice, Santa.
Santa, you might need to listen to more of our episodes.
Yeah, goodbye, Santa.
All right, see you, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
All right, so we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Scrooge, not Mixed Nuts, just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Have you ever watched a movie so bad you just needed to talk to somebody about it?
Well, here at the Flophouse, we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. We'll watch it and we'll talk it. We do the hard work.
Featuring the beautiful vocal talents of Dan McCoy,
Stuart Wellington,
and me, America's Rascal, Elliot Kalin.
New episodes every other Saturday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts, dude. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Scrooge. Drea, would you mind providing a synopsis of the film?
A synopsis?
A synopsis.
I got a quick synopsis for you. Hey, guys. Scrooged, I'm taking this bit from the Wikipedia, a 1988 American Christmas comedy directed by Richard Donner, who also did Superman and The Omen.
Yes.
So, of course,
a million laughs.
Of course, this film was destined to be made. It's a retelling of the 1843 novella A Christmas Carol by one Mr. Charles Dickens. Scrooged is a modern redoing. It follows Bill Murray as Frank Cross, a cynical and selfish television executive who's visited by a succession of ghosts on Christmas Eve, intent on helping him regain his Christmas spirit, and hopefully say, "You boy, what day it is!" My favorite part of any Christmas Carol. It's worth noting here in synopsis land that the film also stars Karen Allen, John Forsythe, Bobcat Goldthwait, Carol Kane, Robert Mitchum, Michael J. Pollard, and Alfred Woodard, and David Johansen from the New York Dolls.
And Michael J. Pollard, by the way, passed away very recently.
Oh,
so
pour
one
peace.
Out for Oscar winner Michael J. Pollard from Bonnie and Clyde.
So I definitely want to kick this off with this question, which is, did anyone buy Bill Murray as a jackass. Like, I didn't get the assholeness from it. I just see.
Are you kidding me?
For me, I just kept seeing fun Bill Murray. Like, I kept seeing fun.
Bill Murray is an asshole.
Yeah. I think there has been there's a bubbling undercurrent of rage to Bill Murray.
Yeah.
In his most like charmingly snarky offbeat performances. So I think he just sort of leans into that half of himself.
Yeah.
I thought it was perfect casting because, yeah, he's totally a dick.
I feel like if you knew, it's maybe when were you born or how'd you first inject your Bill Murray? If you only knew him, like I was obviously like Carl from Caddyshack and early stuff or
SNL.
Of those. But maybe it's my knowledge of him and Gilda on SNL and how horrible he was and his whole, like, he's so great and just weird and absurdist and individualistic, but he does have like a graininess. His whole thing is he doesn't have an agent. He doesn't have a phone. You can't get him unless you get him. Like, there's a crankiness to him that for me in this role, I was like, I actually found it less hard to believe that he was an asshole executive and more that I loved the sort of counter casting of him as like a rich, like, not a ladies man in the normal way, but like this guy that just like all of the like fawning women. And I was like, really? Because that's all charisma. Like Bill Murray, if I'm just showing you his headshot, like we're flipping through and I don't know, we'll be like, that's not, is there someone that looks more like John Tesh? Like that is not what we're looking for.
I think this is like, you know, this is between the two Ghostbusters, you know, but this is right in the sort of sweet spot of like his, you know, the obnoxious parts and the manic parts and the, you know, the charming parts, certainly, and the funny parts, like all those things kind of come together in this role. I mean, I'm of mixed feelings about Scrooge.
Would you say you have mixed nuts?
I would never say that. I saw this when it came out, and you know, I was like right after college. So I mean, like I had a pretty firm grasp on like my thought of who Bill Murray is and what he does. There are parts of this movie that I think are brilliant and funny and sharp, and then there are parts that just feel like they are making this up as they go along. Like, there's a sheen of coke sweat at certain parts of this movie where you're just like, okay, we're just going to go with that then, I guess.
But to me, that frenetic quality fits both his character and the fact that it's set in this, like, TV industry world.
Yeah. Mm.
I was like, yeah, that world has a coke sheen to it.
Yeah.
So beyond the Bill Murray
stuff.
Was this
your first viewing as well?
This was my first viewing. This movie came out the year I was born. The things that were the funniest to me were like the subtle things, like how bad this Christmas Carol that lived in the world of this movie was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Like every snippet of that movie, I was like, this is like when they had the Living Color Dancers.
The Solid Gold Dancers.
Oh my God.
The Living Color Dancers, that would have been too cool for this.
That's what I mean of the
Mary
energy.
Lou Retton and Buddy Hackett.
Yeah,
and
that even the sloppy elements of the movie seemed to, they mirrored the feel of the TV production that he's overseeing, which is this live version of A Christmas Carol. So the show within a show. And it is so nicely ridiculous. There's, to me, the most classic is when the prop guy comes and he's like, I've tried to hot glue the antlers to the mouse, but I can't get him to stay.
I'm sorry, I'm new here and I got a problem.
I'll bet. What?
Well, my problem is this little fella.
Oh.
I can't get the antlers glued onto this little guy. We tried crazy glue, but it don't work.
Have you tried staples?
Staples?
Every element's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, you were talking earlier about how, like, as a producer, you always have to think about, you can't watch a movie without thinking what the shooting schedule was.
Right.
I'm like, all right, we got Mitchum for 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
We got John Glover for 3 days.
Mitchum is in this movie.
And I think this movie also sort of, like, opened the floodgates of what I call the Scrooge is an Ambitious Career Woman movies. Because for a while there on TV, it was like, you got the Susan Lucci version, you got the Cicely Tyson, the Vanessa Williams, the Tori Spelling. Like, there was a whole spate of like ball busting corporate women who get the, you know, the Scrooge treatment.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Among my mixed feelings about this movie, I love Carol Kane in general. I cannot stand her in this movie.
No!
I find the slapstick so overdone and so shrill. I don't know. I know it's a word I'm supposed to use, but I find it really overbearing. But I know I'm in the minority. People love her, particularly in this movie, so, like, you know, don't at me. But yeah, but I, on the other hand, like, I think Murray has some amazing moments. Like, I love it when he's screaming at Alfre Woodard.
You're doing Helmsley Palace at 7 o'clock, and I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna take my son.
No, you're not. You're staying here with me. We're working late.
Well, I have to take my son to the doctor.
Grace, when I work late, you work late.
But I made the appointment 2 months ago.
I care. We're indivisible. If I'm working late, you gotta work late. If you can't work late, I can't work late. If I can't work late, I can't work late.
I will say this, if nothing else, probably my favorite movie, Tiny Tim, is in this movie.
He's so good.
Because, like, that is such a
it's
license.
It's Alfre Woodard's son.
Right.
Yeah.
And the point of the thing
character
is,
son.
It's not that he is, like, physically disabled. He has not spoken since he saw his father get murdered. And so the fact that he says, God blesses everyone at the end, it's not the line, it's that he says anything
so
at all.
Yeah. True. He earns it more than they normally do.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that, you know, Tiny Tim is such a Dickensy device of, like, mm-hmm. easy tears, you know, little Nell, and, like, he's got these characters that just exist to sort of tug at the heartstrings. And I've seen some really shameless Tiny Tims over the years, and this one is very, like, you know, unsentimental in a lot of ways, and so it does land really sharply by not attempting to make you cry the whole movie. When he gets his moment, bam, it totally works.
Should we talk a bit more about, like, because I think that there are a number of Christmas carols that people have seen, and, like, for me, my number one Christmas carol will always be the Muppets Christmas Carol.
Okay.
I love Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge in that, and I love the Muppets anyway. There's something that they bring, there's a joy that they bring to things in most of their films and the TV show, but some of the, you know, some are more successful than others, but they have a natural sort of heartline that comes through. But
I like that one. I think that's one of those ones that definitely it's a how old were you when you first saw
it?
Yeah. You know, but I think we now have this generation of people who grew up where that was probably their first one or one of the only ones they ever saw, and so that's the one they hold dear. And I like it a lot. I think it is definitely one of the best ones. But, like, I love the Alistair Sim one from 1951.
Oh,
I think that's a great one, and a really smart adaptation in a lot of ways in terms of just some of the writing choices. I'm a huge fan of the 1970 musical Scrooge with Albert Finney.
Really?
Yeah, because Finney's one of the few actors ever in these movies to play young Scrooge and old Scrooge.
Oh.
So he's got the latex on to be, like, miserly old, you know, awful Scrooge. But then you see in the flashbacks where he's in love with Fezziwig's daughter, and it's like hot-ass 1970
That's
Albert
right,
Finney.
Because don't they end up... Doesn't he end up, like, getting back together with her? Is there one that reimagines where...
I don't know. There's
that they cast a young enough Scrooge that they end the story with, like, the implication that he gets back together with Belle.
That's not this one. Okay. But, I mean, there might be some of them. I mean, it's funny. Like, I have a whole chapter in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas
about
these adaptations, and I really get into those. Like, does this one have ignorance and want in it? You know, and there are some where, like, the Ghost of Christmas Present, as in the book, shows Scrooge her happy married life and her children and the life that he could have had with her but didn't, and then other ones that skip it entirely. So it just sort of depends from thing to thing. The George C. Scott TV one in from '84 is also really
good. I'm going to change mine. Obviously, the very best one ever made is Ghost of Girlfriend's Past. With Matthew McConaughey
and Michael Douglas. Oh, I totally forgot about that.
Just like a perfect film, a masterpiece in every way.
And not even Christmassy.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah, the only one of the carols I've seen has been The Muppet, and that was years ago. And it's so funny because, like, for me, I relate to Carol not necessarily as, like, a type of movie, but it is my second favorite seasonal sitcom device. Because they use the sitcoms have run Carol into the ground, but I love it. I love
you calling it Carol. I'm not gonna lie. That's all I need.
Yeah, you know, that's
but yeah,
Carol,
it is a good movie.
I love Cate Blanchett in that.
Love it. You know, my favorite Carol, the one with Kate Blanchett. Yeah. But no, it is, it's become such a narrative
a device,
trope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love it. My first favorite is still going to be the Halloween murder mystery blackout. Someone, the lights come back up. Or I guess that's technically, I guess you'd call it the Clue thing, right?
Yeah.
No, one person's dead through Clue, right? And then...
Yeah. Well, originally, then there's more. Yeah. For sure, like sitcoms love to do It's a Wonderful Life or A Christmas Carol in terms of setting up that structure, for sure. You would like the Vanessa Williams one, A Diva's Christmas Carol, I think.
You had him at Divas.
I'm locked in.
The Ghost of Christmas Future is a VH1 episode of Behind the Music.
No!
Yes!
I'm watching that.
The last one I'll say, because it was one that I remember being disappointed by. Oh, good. Way to end on a bummer, Clark. Mm. But the Robert Zemeckis did an animated one with Jim Carrey. Like, there are all these components. And Jim Carrey also played all of the ghosts as well as Scrooge.
Yeah, it was all mocap. And
it had that weird polar
experience. Gary Oldman plays Tiny Tim. It's just
something that I remember hearing about and was like, oh, this could be... Like, Jim Carrey is a really interesting performer you're going to do this. And it... Rah, rah.
Oh, yeah. This is the... You know what A Christmas Carol needs? More carriage races.
Listen.
Can't get enough of those carriage races.
Or chases or whatever. I don't remember now, but it's just like, they were insane.
Ooh.
My favorite Christmas movie overall is Christmas in Connecticut with Barbara Stanwyck. It is so good. She plays a single gal who writes a column about a fictitious family that she's invented, and it's for like a good housekeeping type thing and like whatever.
She's like if Martha Stewart were really Carrie Bradshaw.
Yes. And then her editor is like, oh, I'm coming to meet you. I can't wait to meet this family and children and have you cook for me.
Well, and if this war hero who like reads her magazines when he can't eat in the hospital. And so they have this whole big thing where he's going to come to her farmhouse, which does not exist.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a whole
thing.
So
it's like, it becomes like, it's Christmas and it's hijinks and it involves her basically stealing a baby. So like all things that I love.
Well, if we're combining Christmas and hijinks, I'm going to give it to the goat. And you probably already guessed it based on those two things, which is the Home Alone series up until 2. those are my favorite. Those grew up. And that was like, that is, when you look back on Home Alone, you'll understand everything about millennials today. That was like the seed of knowledge all millennials needed to be snarky fucks. Like, we're like, oh yeah, we'll get the upper hand, and instead of calling the authorities, we'll take matters into our own hands and like maim these two robbers.
There's this weird French movie called Dial Code Santa Claus that actually came out a year before Home Alone.
Oh, really?
And it's virtually the same movie.
Oh, I have to see it.
More fucked up, and like it's like a serial killer dressed as Santa. Like, it's crazy.
Is that your favorite Christmas movie?
No, it is not.
Well, you get to do a whole... Oh, you're doing just the top five of this year, Liz.
Yes.
So do you have an overall favorite?
What's your all-time? Oh, man. You know, it's hard to say, but I, all things being equal, I have to go with It's a Wonderful Life. I know it's an obvious answer, but it's a great movie in general anyway, and I think it delivers all the Christmas stuff you want, and it's a movie that you can rewatch over and over and over again and always find new stuff and be always sort of moved by it. And, you know, I go through the same angst watching it the 20th time that I do the first time. I always like to say it has one of the great happy endings of all time, but boy, do they make you earn it.
It got its place rightfully.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm definitely probably going to watch that tonight. I've been trying to watch like a Christmas movie a night.
Nice.
And we'll get into that a little later with mine. But our final review, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I don't think we have any options to screen old Scrooge.
So probably
but not. I will say I really love Scrooge. So I'll say, for the purpose of how we view things, screen it. Go find a retro cinema and make it happen. I think it's fun and ridiculous and just a good time.
It did pop up this month at the New Beverly.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I was just going to...
In a double feature with Christmas Vacation.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll say stream it. I mean, it's... I think it is it's worth seeing, but like you should see a lot of other Christmas carols as well. Like, if this is your only exposure to this, it's like, whoa, okay, no. There are other...
Save that for Ghost of Girlfriend's Past.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Let's get real about this.
Yeah, yeah. Like, as it stands, this Scrooged is my favorite Christmas carol movie. But yeah, no, I would say, yeah, this too late now. You should have checked on Alonzo's Twitter. But yeah, I saw that dope list of the program for the new Bev this month of all the Christmas movies. And I was being a little stinker when I was like, they better have Eyes Wide Shut. And sure enough, of course, Quentin Tarantino put Eyes... Well, he's not the programmer. Who is the programmer?
Phil Blankenship did a lot of the programming for December. I think QT has a hand in at times, yeah. But I actually, if you did not check it out, the Pure Cinema podcast, I was on with Phil and with Elric and Brian, and we talked about the whole December lineup at the New Beverly and got very into the weeds on Christmas stuff. So if you like hearing me talk about this stuff, there's about 20,000 other podcasts I did it on this month, and that's one of them.
Ooh, all right. Well, yeah, and I'm going to also say screen it if it's at a theater, but it probably won't be, so go ahead and stream it. But we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Janet Varney, and like many of you, some more recent than others, I used to be a teenager. In fact, just about all of my friends were too, including wonderful women like Allison Brie.
I'm dead center on the balance beam. And this is like a big gym. All the kids' parents are there watching. I have to stop, like, you know, when you have to pee so bad and you can't even move. And then I just go. I just pee right in the middle of the high balance beam.
So join me every week on the JV Club podcast, where I speak with complicated, funny, messy humans as we reminisce about our adolescences and how they led us to becoming who we are. Find it every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Drea Clark.
And now it's time for our next segment, which...
What?
Is Santa back? Is Santa back?
Hey, guys, I forgot my phone. But also, I forgot to ask you all something. Just so you guys know... You guys all made the nice list.
Oh, I wasn't going to ask, but that's good to know. Thank you.
You did. Ify, you also made the horny list, just so you know.
I didn't know there was another list.
Yeah, that's just a separate list. That's just for my personal files.
Oh, nice.
Since you all made the nice list, I wanted to see what you guys wanted for Christmas. Mm. And since I'm also very powerful in the film industry, I'd like to know what you specifically want for movies this year.
Ooh.
What trends would you like to see continue from last year? What trends would you like to see end with the end of 2019? And what kind of what did the films of 2019 lack that you'd like to see rectified in the coming year? That kind of thing.
Okay.
Ify, would you like to go first and tell me what you'd like for Christmas, movie-wise?
Yeah. No, I think I'd like to see the trend of, like, dope... like large ensemble movies. Like, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about Knives Out, and it was great to see. I will say, like, as excited as I was, there was that, like, light thing in the back of my mind of, like, oh, it's a bunch of whites with a few of us people of color, but it's kind of like being driven and led by a person of color, and I was like, all right, Ryan, you got me. That was the real whodunit. But I feel like there's this level of where everyone's trying to make mainstream artsy films, and I've been feeling a lot of that energy with your Queens and Slims and even stuff like Knives Out and your Jojo Rabbits, and I want that to keep going. I want, as the media brands start to homogenize more and more and get bought out and combined together, I want those, like,
movies for grown-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
I think adding on that, just to a bridge or put in my own Santa, the idea of the movies for grown-ups, but also the idea of artistic, interesting films by up-and-coming directors that are doing, well, wide releases. Like,
yeah.
Queen and Slim being a studio film with a wide release with one of the leads is an unknown.
Yeah.
The other is Oscar-nominated and starred in a huge movie, but still... my mom probably doesn't know who Daniel Kaluuya is. Yeah. Like, and I love that. Jojo Rabbit, Taika clearly has a track record and now even a Marvel movie, but it's an unusual film to do as a like wider release. So yeah. I'm all for supporting that as well. I think there's been, numbers-wise at the studios, the number of women, the number of people of color directing films mm-hmm. is still shoddy as all hell. So if you could really sort of like cinch some waste in that area, that'd be great. There are films coming out next year that I'm so excited about. The, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn is directed by Kathy Yan. And her first film, Dead Pigs, is so strange and it manages to be like super dark and weird. There's literally a like river of dead pigs. The dead pigs are not a metaphor. but it's also light and buoyant. It's an ensemble. Like, I'm just super excited for that movie. I'm excited for Nikki Caro's live action Mulan. There's some big female ones coming next year. So I'm going to continue to put all of like efforts into the universe and the film world. For that. That's on my list, Santa. Well, you didn't ask, but I wanted you to know.
Thank you. Well, I was going to ask you. Just
you don't even need to, though. I'm ready.
Drea okay, barged right in. Well,
Alonzo, would you like to go next?
Thank you. Yes, I'll wait to be asked, Santa.
I was bridging from him.
Well, I'm going to bridge off of Drea and say, obviously, more queer representation would be great. You know, the L's, the G's, the B's, and the T's, and the I's, and the A's, and the pluses, and the everybody else. There was interesting piece in The Wrap earlier this month about how Lifetime is starting to like get some queer visibility in there, and Hallmark hasn't done it yet, but they're at least paying lip service to the notion that they're open to it. So I would like to see that. I would like to see more feature films that are about queer characters. And I would also like it for Adam Sandler to work exclusively with auteurs and stop making shitty comedies.
Ooh, that's specific. I like that one.
Well, did you hear what he said earlier this month that he was like,
if he doesn't get an Oscar, he's going to make a really shitty one. I'm like, you've already made the really shitty one, and you just got that in the chamber, I think. And the thing I ask for every year is that I want Todd Haynes to do a miniseries version of Valley of the Dolls that is as faithful to the novel as his version of Mildred Pierce was.
Oh, my God. No more wishes. We need to end on that one.
All right.
We all want that one.
Thank you, everybody. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Santa.
Don't forget your phone.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. The time has come. The moment that the Schott fam has been waiting for. It is Christmas Zaddy's top 5 Christmas movies of the year.
Woo!
Alonzo, are you ready?
Yes. Although I'm going to cheat and do 6.
Yeah. Ooh. Because it's a Christmas miracle.
Because I'm the Christmas Zaddy and I can.
Yeah.
So my number 6, and I'm only putting this separately because it's sort of its own thing, is Klaus, which is the animated film that Netflix did this year. And it's a Santa origin story and I think beautifully rendered. And it's just weird comparing it apples and oranges style to these sort of live action films. But I think it's very charming, and I love the look of it. I didn't think it was as funny as it thought it was, but I think it is. It gets the sentiment right, which is very important in a Christmas movie. And I can see this one becoming that like families go back to in years to come. So just wanted to give that a shout out. So my number 5 is the Disney Plus movie Noel.
Ooh.
With Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. Great cast. Julie Hagerty, who's also popping up in Marriage Story on Netflix, and Michael Gross and Billy Eichner and Shirley MacLaine and all these amazing people. You know, it's a little longer than it needs to be, but I think it has a lot of charm to it. It's playing with some of the elf tropes, but it's also giving us the idea of a woman assuming the patriarchal mantle of Santa Claus as it gets passed from generation to generation. And I just think Anna Kendrick is, you know, a treasure. She's, you know, I think a great comedian and a great, you know, kind of musical comedy performer, and she just she does all the things right. So I'm a fan.
So charming.
So charming. Number four is Ghosting the Spirit of Christmas, which was a Freeform movie. You know, I think a really kind of fun rom-com dealing with, you have a, it's basically about the lead character is a woman who goes out on this amazing first date with a guy, and then on the way home, she gets killed in a car accident. So she literally ghosts him, but spends the rest of the movie as a ghost trying to figure out why, you know, she's still around. The only person who can see her is at first her best friend and then later other people. I don't want to give away too much, but it's really charming. And as a bonus, the secondary couple in the movie is two women who fall in love.
Oh, so, yeah, I like that.
They can do that in these movies,
nice lady
as it turns
romance.
Out. You know, also I want to give a shout out to Season of Love. I hope it's the first of many attempts to do a queer spin on the kind of traditional Hallmark Lifetime Christmas movie. I think it's a very good first shot at it, and I want to see more from, you know, from Tello Films, who did this one, but, you know, I'd like other filmmakers to step up as well, yeah, and see what they can make happen. My number three is a Hallmark movie, surprisingly mm-hmm. enough, even though I think a lot of their stuff this year was super formulaic, even by Hallmark standards. They had a movie called Two Turtle Doves that was about a, well, for one thing, our lead female character is a neuroscientist.
Sure.
Never had that on Hallmark before. She is, her grandmother dies. Her grandmother who raised her dies, leaves her a video will explaining that, you know, she will inherit the house, but she has to spend Christmas in the house and, like, sort of do the traditional stuff that they used to do, which is, you know, kind of used to stuff they've done on this channel before. But this one is really more acutely about grief and how it affects people, because the lawyer, who is the next door neighbor to the grandmother and who is the executor of the will, is a widow who's recently lost his wife, is raising a young daughter, and, you know, they're going through their own sort of like annual Christmas traditions in a way to kind of keep the mother's memory alive. There's an amazingly moving scene where the daughter, they suggest an activity that the daughter and the mother used to do, and the daughter's like, I don't know that I want to, it makes me sad. And the father's like, well, that's okay, you can be sad at Christmas. And the daughter's like, well, I never see you sad. He's like, I'm sad all the time. And they really have this genuine conversation about grief and about, you know, Christmas and how it makes us think about people and how that's a, it can be sad, but it can also be, you know, a wonderful thing. And it's like, this moment of genuine human emotion in a Hallmark movie.
Two Turtle Doves?
Two Turtle Doves.
Nice.
Yeah, starring Nikki DeLoach and Michael Rady. Really, really enjoyed it and really impressed with that. I would love to see them make more movies like that. Number two, also from Netflix, is a film called Let It Snow. It's a YA title about a group of various teenage couples and possible couples on the day before Christmas as various sort of dramas ensue and the town gets kind of snowed in. Again, there's a same-sex couple. There's an interracial couple. Joan Cusack wears a tinfoil hat. There's a lot to love here. It's very charming. And it stars Kieran Shipka, who I think is a really terrific young actress. You remember her as Don Draper's daughter from Mad Men, of course.
More recently as Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch, yeah. Right, of course, silly me. Also on Netflix, yeah. Yes. And then my number one is an indie that I've talked about on the show before, a movie called Feast of the Seven Fishes, that got a little bit of theatrical play, but mainly is sort of a setup for its streaming, and now it's on Blu-ray from Shout Factory. And it's just this very charming period comedy set in the early 80s about a guy who is, you know, working in his parents' store, but he really wants to go to art school. And, you know, he meets this girl who's an Ivy Leaguer and kind of, you know, opens him up his eyes to the possibility that, you know, there are other things that he could do with his life. There's a wonderful deep bench of character actors, people like Joe Pantoliano and Lynn Cohen, but the leads are Skylar Gisondo, who is in Booksmart, and Madison Eisman, who was in the last Annabelle movie, and she's in the Jumanji films. Written, directed by a guy named Robert Tennell, based on his own graphic novel / cookbook.
Nice.
And, you know, I hope people find this movie. I hope, you know, the cool thing about Christmas movies, I was just telling our dear friend April Wolf, that, you know, like, people are talking about Black Christmas now, and it's a film that's in theaters, but, you know, the cool thing about Christmas movies is that they have this ongoing life, and people can kind of dig them out every December and rediscover them every December and show them to other people. So, you know, I hope that Black Christmas continues to grow in that way. I didn't put it on my list because I completely recused myself from reviewing that movie because
that's fair.
Jesus
Christ,
that's
very fair.
April Wolf, come on. But you know, I want that movie to gain in stature as more Christmases pass by us, and I also want that certainly for Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Nice.
Ooh, nice.
Listen, you had me at Skylar and Madison.
Yeah.
Right?
Locked in. Well, thank you, Christmas Zaddy, and thank y'all, listeners. So why don't you pop those six movies in and enjoy yourself.
One at a time.
Yeah. Don't pop them all in at the same. But have yourself a very movie Christmas.
Movie Little Christmas.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I'll answer to either.
But now is time for the staff picks. It could be any movie in theaters, streaming, what have you. Alonzo, why don't you start us off?
Well, you know, it's time to move past Christmas stuff. And so here's a film that I'm very excited that came out on Blu-ray for the first time this month. And it is the screen adaptation of Kurt Vonnegut's novel Slaughterhouse-Five, directed by, I think, one of the great underrated American auteurs, George Roy Hill. This is a guy whose filmography spans everything from one of the great sports comedies ever made, Slapshot, to the musical Thoroughly Modern Millie, to the charming comedy A Little Romance, to The Sting and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, to this amazing adaptation of a really difficult novel to adapt. It's about a character named Billy Pilgrim. He fights in World War II. He's taken prisoner and has to help clean up Dresden after the bombing. Or actually, he's in Dresden when the bombing happens. But it becomes, as the novel describes it, unstuck in time. So he's constantly jumping back and forth between the 40s and his life in suburbia in the 70s, and then living on the planet Tralfamador with a porn star named Montana Wildhack, mm-hmm. played by Valerie Perrine. And the movie captures this really well, thanks in no small part to the great editing by the legendary Dee Dee Allen. I love this movie. People don't talk about it enough. People haven't seen it enough. And now that it's out on Blu-ray, I hope that Slaughterhouse-Five finds a new audience.
And so it goes.
I like... Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I read books. God. I read books.
Oh.
I'm still catching my breath over here.
Yeah.
I do have a staff pick, though.
Ooh,
I'm excited
it?
You brought up George C. Hill. You were like, oh, Richard Donner? You think you have a wide array of films? Sit down for one moment, sir. The Lighthouse comes out on December 20th, which I think is today, and the day this comes out. And so it comes out on iTunes and digital release. And a lot of people weren't able to catch that in the theaters because it was pretty limited. It is black and white, dark absurdity from Robert Eggers, who also directed The Witch. It stars Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, it does.
Who very much are getting a lot of their awards buzz, as the kids say, rightfully so. It is fascinating. It is super weird. It is the kind of thing that you're like, oh, what can film do to tell a story that other mediums cannot? And one of those things is fart. There's farts. There's a lot of farting in it. I'm just prepping you for that. But there's a lot of other things, too. It's fascinating.
Ooh.
I would check out The Lighthouse.
And get ready for its crazy aspect ratio on your television, because the picture is almost square.
Oh, yeah. I can't even imagine. It's just pillar box, letter box, the whole thing. Mm.
This is picket fence box. I don't know how to describe it.
Oh, yeah. Well, mine, I did want to keep the Christmas theme going. And, you know, I finally got around to seeing this, you know, in my house. Got my new sound system. It's bumping. I got 5.1. Dolby surround sound, and I got to experience some of the movies I missed, as they should be, in loud, shaking loudness. And so I'm gonna go with Shazam, a Christmas movie.
Nice.
That I really, after seeing it, I was like, oh, this is a pretty good superhero Christmas movie. Mm. It really wraps it up. It has the family aspect.
Yeah.
It's like, it really, like, you know, you have, it's just all the recipes for a good Christmas.
Unexpected
you have
Adam Brody?
Yeah. I know, he sneaks
just like
in there.
Like Christmas.
Yeah. So, yeah.
He invented Chrismica, you know.
Right. Oh, Seth Cohen.
Well, if you haven't seen Shazam, I highly recommend it. It is a fun, and I think it'll be especially fun to watch it right now.
Oh, totally.
During the Christmas season. But now, before we go, it's time to read a 5-star review. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. Drea, why don't you read it?
I would be honored to.
It's Christmas.
Go West 37 said, I found this podcast about 2 months ago when I fell down a Spider-Man hole rewatching every film, and I wanted to hear someone talk about Far From Home. Stumbled upon this, and Iffy's nerdiness made me so happy. I quickly caught up on all the episodes after that, and I love what each member of the team brings to the table. Everyone is honest, yet respectful, and I love the flow of conversation between Drea, Alonso, and Iffy. What I love even more than the movie reviews themselves is the news the team brings to the table. It a dick! And the staff picks that always give me movies to add to my list. Sometimes I find myself commenting out loud to things y'all say or playing along with the games you'll randomly throw in. Wish I could be a fly on the wall in the studio. Alonso, Drea, Iffy, keep killing it!
Oh, thanks, Gomez.
That was great. Thank you. Yeah.
That's how Drea listens to the show, too.
I do. I talk back. Even when I'm not here, I talk back.
Oh, and now... we have a special announcement. We wanted to announce that you can now officially buy a Jumbotron on our show.
Woohoo!
What is a Jumbotron, you may ask? Well, Maximum Fun's Jumbotron program allows anyone to share their message on a MaximumFun.org podcast, just like the Jumbotron at the ballpark. It's a fun way to show your support for your favorite shows and get the word out about what you're up to. It's easy and it's cheap. Only $100 for a personal message or $200 for a promotional one. So if you want us to give a special shout out to a friend or a loved one, check us out at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Before we go, since it's a few days before Christmas, I have to tell you all about MaxFunStore.com.
He has to.
I have to. Casey is pointing a Colt 45 through the glass. But you can go there to buy all the Maximum Fun merch you ever wanted, including our incredible Who Shot Your Christmas ornament. Lots of discussion, planning went into it, and I'm so excited for y'all to get it. It's back in stock, and it is great.
Mine has a proud place of prominence on my tree.
Ooh.
My aforementioned awesome tree.
Yes.
Has the Who Shot You ornament on. I couldn't be prouder.
Or you could be like me and you don't need a tree or to celebrate Christmas at all and still enjoy our ornament.
Yeah. Like I said, you can hang them over your rearview mirror like fuzzy dice and be the coolest kid in the car. Or they'll know when someone's like, what are we listening to? You'll just point to the ornament. Because, of course, I'm hoping that you're playing, you're bumping our episodes.
That's right.
As you drive wherever you're going. It's a great gift for a fellow Who Shot You listener around the holidays. And there are a bunch of other gifts for other Max Fun shows, too. So go check out MaxFunStore.com. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at Who Shot You Pod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/Who Shot You Podcast. Or send us an email at WhoShotYou@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
Merry Christmas!
Happy holidays.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.